Chicago, the city with many names. It's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
Okay, everybody, get the hell up. Wake up. It's time for another episode of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network. My name is Joe Vecchio. Welcome to the show.
Oh, I love doing that.
Good morning, everybody. How is everyone today? It is 9 o'clock here in Central Standard Time, 10 o'clock on the East Coast, 7 o'clock in Los Angeles, and I want to say hi to all of you ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all the ships at sea. I want to say hi once again from your home for Progressive Radio, Head On Radio Network. That's at headonradionetwork.com. How is everybody today? We got snow. What the hell is going on? Where did this come from? Last night I get home and it's like 50 degrees and it's nice and comfortable. And there were a couple of, you know, those little kind of sliver clouds in the sky, or I don't know what you call them. Just a thin layer of clouds. Nothing big. You can see the sky through it. Beautiful night. Nice warm weather. Little bit of a breeze, as is common here in Chicago. No big deal. I get up this morning, I look out the window. What do I see but snow? It is April 11th. And my roommate, who used to live in Chicago and moved away and came back recently after spending 12 years in San Francisco, he told me it never snows in April in Chicago. Or it's not this cold, generally, this part of the year. You know, once the end of March comes along, middle of March, end of March, everything, no. I get here and we got freaking snow. The smart mom, and this is probably why the smart mom in the Head On Radio chat room is telling me that those are cirrus clouds. Okay, C-I-R-R-U-S. Well, you know, I'm fine with that. I'm not Mr. Weather Guy. I just look out. My weather report is I look out the window generally. That's my weather report. I look out the window. Recently, I've been going on the Chicago Tribune website to check the daily weather, and it's supposed to be in the 30s today. And it's just infuriating because you think you got this stuff behind you and you're ready for a nice spring. The plants were ready for it. The plants are all sprouting. Oh boy, here we go. It's springtime. And then what the hell is this? You see some plants sitting there. The plants, by the way, have talk like idiots. For anybody who's ever heard a plant talk, you know they talk like idiots. What the hell's this? What's going on here? What's all this white stuff again? Dagnabbit, we had it when we were branches. Now we got some leaves coming out. We got the white stuff all over. Hey, quit playing with us. God almighty. Anyway, it's just really, really weird. And it's been a frustrating time for me here in Chicago. I only moved here in August, and so I really don't know all the weather patterns yet. But I get up here in August, and I spent the last 12 years in Atlanta before I moved up here to Chicago. And in all those 12 years, I don't remember the temperature ever hitting once 100 degrees. And this is Atlanta. You expect it to be hot. It's certainly very humid down there, and when summer hits, you really, really feel it. Okay, hang on a second here. Excuse me. I do have Mountain Dew today because I do need to wake up. But I get up here to Chicago in August, and in the first week we had temperatures of 100 degrees. And I'm like, what is going on here? This is supposed to be Chicago. I mean, everything you hear about Chicago, if you read about it in the news or see about it in all the old channels or whatnot, it's supposed to be freaking cold. And here we get 100 degrees in the summer, and now, okay, and we're going through the winter, and we're going through December, and we're going through, you know, November and December, and we're just like, when is the cold coming? Because through December, we still had 50, 60-degree weather. And then you get into January, and we get some serious snow, and you think, okay, that's cool. And you get through February, and, you know, we get some more serious snow, and that's okay, because you expect it. It's January. It's February. March comes along, and about halfway through March, it looks like it's starting to break. We had a couple of days where it was in the 70s, and now all of a sudden, wham, here we go, it's snow again. Somebody got to do something about this. Call my alderman. I'm going to call my alderman and say, hey, why'd you order this snow, boy? Actually, I shouldn't say boy about our alderman. Our alderman is a guy named Benjamin Stone, I think his name is. He's been an alderman here since before I was born, it seems. That really creeps me out, when someone's had an occupation since before I was born. And they had a little re-election campaign yesterday. I guess the last regular election wasn't good enough that he didn't get quite 50%, but this guy's usually been winning by huge margins, so I don't know what the hell is going on. But then again, that's par for the course with me. I am nothing more, for those of you who have never listened to me before, I am nothing more but a simple, humble radio talk show host who thinks he knows everything. No, that's not true. Actually, I rather get down on myself quite a lot. And I do this, as with everybody in the Head On Radio Network, I do this show because I feel compelled to do this show. Because I see so much injustice, I see so much insanity. I see so much absolute insanity going on in our country and in the world that it just boggles my mind sometimes how people can be that way. And most of that insanity comes just simply from people being greedy and people being stupid. And there's no sense in it half the time. And there's no sense in it any of the time. The things that people do, and it just basically makes everybody's lives miserable. Because anybody who knows anybody who's really, 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 really rich, and I'm talking about, you know, major, major rich, it's not as much fun as they make it out to be. Yeah, sure, you don't have to, there are some things you never have to worry about, like, you know, whether you got enough money to pay the rent. But there are bad parts to that. Nobody really should have that kind of money. First of all, generally speaking, and I'm not saying it's true for everybody, but generally speaking, people who have that kind of money never really earn it honestly. You know, I mean, people bitch and moan about baseball players, for example, or sports stars who make, you know, $10, $12 million a year. And yet they seem to they perfectly accept the, you know, the big company executive who gets like the guy in Ford who just got fired, Ford just lost like billions of dollars, and in the meantime the CEO gets a bonus of like $20 million. And people seem to think that everything's perfectly fine with that. But you know, ball players and yes, Ray Hinckley in the Head On Radio chat rooms around me, actors, you know, people like that, you know, people say, they make all that kind of money. But you know something, you know, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and all the ships at sea, let me tell you something. These people are still working people. Whether you're an actor, whether you're a ball player, whatever sport, you have to go there and ply your trade every single day. And in the case of sports, you know, Being a sports guy is much more difficult than being an acting guy. Because if you're an actor, then you're doing a movie or you're doing a TV show, and you screw up your line, they say, okay, let's start it all over again, and you get to do it. A ball player can have a really brilliant career, but one screw-up that everybody sees will label you for your whole life. And I give as my perfect example of that Jose Canseco, who, you know, was kind of a jerk on and off the field and had a bunch of moments. But Jose Canseco, among baseball fans, never mind the fact that he had hundreds and hundreds of homers during his career and got thousands of RBIs and was overall one of the more powerful sluggers in the game. What is he going to be remembered for all of his life? That when he was out in the outfield, the ball whacked him on the head and bounced over the fence for a homer. And when people used to bitch at me about, you know, the players and players this, players that, you know, they're all a bunch of little spoiled brats. I said, well, you know something? It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and the reason why they get so much money is because years ago the baseball players stood up to the owners and stood up for themselves and made that sort of stuff possible. When I was back in Atlanta, people hated Tom Glavine there simply because he was their union rep, and they hated the whole idea. Oh, you know, you're in the union, but you can't have that, you know, that's communism. There's communism. And in the meantime, these are people who are working 60-something hours a week, not making anywhere enough money, certainly not making what they're deserving. Their CEO is basically picking their pocket. But, you know, he's the CEO. He gets to do anything he wants. Baseball players. You're a communist. Screw you. You know? After a while, you just got to say, screw you. And eventually, that's why I left the South. There are many, many good progressive people in the South. Don't get me wrong. But unfortunately, the show down there is run by the most lunatic of people. Yes, I know, Ray, sports is not a 12-month job. But you know what? During the season of sports, you have to play at peak level. And you're always a minor injury away from having your career ended. And most people, especially when you're talking about baseball and football, most people never have a career that lasts more than 3 or 4 years. It's a very rare person who lasts more than 5 or 6 years in baseball. I think maybe 20-30% of people who start in baseball last beyond 5 years. And the guys who go on for 15-20 years, those are even rarer. Because those are people who not only play at the top physical skill level, they are also some of the most talented players. And a lot of these people really do love the sport. They love the sport, and they would play it for a lot less money. But you know what? The owners are paying it. And the reason why the owners can pay it is because the owners can afford it, because they get a ton of money from advertising. That's where the bulk of it comes from, really, not attendance. You know, the ballpark, you know, the attendance you take in at the ballpark is fine, and they certainly make enough here in Wrigley Field in Chicago. Wrigley Field, for those of you who don't know much about baseball, excuse me, baseball is one of the oldest sports there is. Okay, the first professional team were the Cincinnati Reds, which are still in the same place, and they were formed in 1873. Okay? And there are two stadiums where they play baseball in particular that are very old. The two oldest stadiums, in fact, I believe. And they are, for all intents and purposes, Mecca to baseball fans. And one is Fenway Park in Boston, which is probably the most. And the second is Wrigley Field here in Chicago. These are classic old stadiums. Hey, let's we're getting on to the first half hour, first break here. Oh, there we go. I had to maneuver something and it got caught. Listen, if you want to call in, you can give me a call at 304-658-5453. 304-658-5453. Give me a call. Talk to me. Let me know what's going on. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Advertising on the Cup of Joe Radio Show is both easy and inexpensive. Ads that cost as little as $5 a piece are a bargain when you consider that the Cup of Joe Show has an audience in the thousands for a live show, and that's not even counting the thousands more that listen on iTunes or at the archives on the White Rose Society. And all you have to do is email me at joe@cupjoe.com, that's CUPJOE.com, to find out how you can advertise your blog, organization, or product. What are you waiting for? Email me now at joe@cupjoe.com, CUPJOE.com, and let internet radio ads work for you.
The following is a Head-On Radio Network special announcement. Ha ha, I'm back! That's right, the rampaging, ranting, tree-hugging, planet-saving, head-banging hippie is back at a brand new time. Fucked Up returns weekdays 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, and late night 1 a.m. in Sydney. So set your streamer to a new Fucked Up time here on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
This is the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back here in the Cup of Joe radio show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Let's get right to the phones, and let's get with our good friend Kevin from Washington, D.C. Now, Kevin, I've got the same audio problems I had yesterday, so let's work our way through this, okay? How are you doing today?
I'm okay. Can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you clearly. It just kind of comes in and out, and I'm not sure if the problem's on my end or not, but we'll figure it out.
Okay. One of the things I want to say about professional sports, a lot of these teams started out as employees working for a corporation who played baseball on the side. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, the Cincinnati Reds or the Giants, whatever, were owned by a company, and the workers who would work their 9 to 5 would play baseball until, as it evolved, they started playing full-time instead of working, like, on the assembly line. You understand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of, in fact, I was watching, I have Ken Burns' baseball documentary, and they had an interview with one guy who said, asking him about playing baseball for a living. He says, I don't care as long as it keeps me away from those damn cows.
Yeah, and, you know, if you look back, you know, a lot of African-American actors of the 60s and 70s were professional football players like Jim Brown and and even the father from Good Time, John Amos, of course.
Fred Williamson.
Fred Williamson.
Fred, yeah. I met him once, actually.
Yeah, so have I. They were all doing that to supplement their incomes during the off-season.
And really, that was really true for many sports players until, you know, the late 60s, early 70s, especially when the baseball union broke the owners.
Babe Ruth had to do vaudeville. You know, the great Babe Ruth, who had to do vaudeville.
But Babe Ruth was still making a ton of money by baseball standards. There was the old joke about he wanted a certain amount of money, and someone said to him, but Babe, that's more money than the president made. And he says, well, after all, I had a better year than he did.
Yeah. But, you know, going on to the higher thing, I think who needs to be unionized are these professional golf and tennis players, which is like, I don't know how you view it, but those are considered like
But golf and tennis are more individual sports, and because these guys, they rely on the prize money they get from the tournaments.
Yeah.
So I really don't know how you would work that. Tennis, at least, you know, I used to really watch tennis because tennis is not like football or basketball where everything's timed. You know, you can sit there and play the game. And golf is the same way, but quite frankly, I don't consider golf to be a sport. You know, in baseball, when you're whacking that ball is coming at you at 90 miles an hour. You know, I can imagine how somebody, how somebody would try to deal with that in golf. Maybe if you had somebody trying to tackle you in golf before you hit the ball.
Yeah.
That would make it more fun.
Well, you know, I'm a golfer, and I must say, I know you're probably saying, what? But I'm a golfer. You know, it's not a physical sport. It's a mental, more of a mental thing, and more of a coordination and timing. You're using other aspects, other skills besides, I guess, physical brawn, let's say, or physical.
Well, yeah, I know. It's a much more subtle type of deal than obviously you can't be like in football where you can just go rah, and go all out and, you know, and play well. But you can't do that in golf, just like you can't do that in baseball.
Yeah.
Kevin, let me let you go because I'm still having the audio problems and it makes it very, very difficult.
Oh, okay, then.
To have a conversation. But listen, you take care and thanks for calling, okay?
Okay. Okay, bye.
Okay. Bye-bye, Kevin. And I got to apologize if anybody does call in, when you do call in, you know, we'll just have to deal with it until we get it straightened out. We'll just deal with that. I can see where golf can be a nice, relaxing sport. You sit there and you whack a ball and then you walk towards it and you whack it again, you know. And people get paid a lot of money, I guess. Bob's like, relaxing? Bull. I guess it gets pretty frustrating. You know, the only golf I've ever really played is miniature golf, and, you know, I don't really take that very seriously. So I'm just kind of like, whatever, you know. Yeah, I've seen people stress out over golf, and I was like, why, you know. But, you know, it's all depends on where you grew up. And I grew up a poor kid in Brooklyn, and for us it was baseball. Everything was baseball. In Brooklyn in the 60s and in the 50s, baseball was religion. And in New York, it's still religion. And, in fact, here in Chicago, especially among Cub fans, it's like a religion. And, you know, and what the Cubs do every day when they play in Wrigley Field, and even if they're not playing in Wrigley Field, if there's a win, they have a little flag with a W on it, if the Cubs win, and they raise it above the stadium. And if they lose, they've got a little flag with an L on it. And they raise it above the stadium. And if you ever go to a park, no matter how bad the Cubs play, and probably because they play so bad, they have that whole lovable loser thing, the stadium is always packed. Wrigley Field is always packed to the rafters. And it's even more remarkable when you consider how much they charge for seats. The absolute cheapest seats for a seat in Wrigley Field is a bleacher seat during what they call non-prime games, like when they're playing some schmuck team, that's not going anywhere. And that's the bleacher seats. And even in Turner Field in Atlanta, which is a brand-new stadium, and a very nice stadium, by the way, you can get seats for like $4 or $5. But here they're very expensive. And if you're going to see, you know, the Cubs play a team like the Braves or their big rivals, the Cardinals, you're going to pay a minimum of $20. Excuse me. But I love baseball. And getting back to the weather, the weather has been so bad in some parts of the country, they actually had to cancel ball games. They canceled 4 games in Cleveland because of snow. 4 games. Because, you know, unlike football, you cannot play baseball in bad weather. You absolutely cannot play baseball in bad weather. But, you know, the thing about it is when you're playing golf, you know, that ball is just sitting there when you hit it. In baseball, like I said, it's coming at you at 90 miles an hour, and hitting a ball with a bat, a round ball with a round bat, is the single most difficult specific skill in all sports. And people have talked about this before, and I'll simply repeat it because it makes sense. In football, if you're a quarterback, if you complete 30% of your passes, you're not going to last very long as a quarterback. In basketball, if you only shoot 30% from the floor, you're not going to last very long as a basketball player. In baseball, if you're a hitter and you get on and you get a hit 30% of the time, you could go to the Hall of Fame. That's how difficult it is. Baseball is a game of losing. You're invariably going to lose more than you win. Unless you're with the Yankees, of course. And the last, there was one guy that got, the last guy that hit 400, that is, got a hit 4 times out of every 10 at-bats, was Ted Williams. And think about that. And this guy, you know, is one of the greatest hitters who ever lived, if not the greatest hitter who ever lived. And the best he can do in one season is barely squeak out to 400. And barely. It was like 402, 403. That's remarkable. But that's the way baseball is. And when I grew up, and the reason why I feel the way I do about baseball is because I grew up with it. And when I moved down to the South, they didn't talk so much about baseball. They talk a lot about college football, college basketball, mostly college football, of course. In Texas, it's high school football is the big thing. And I used to kind of, you know, you just kind of laugh about that. But then, you know, I realized that this is their history. This is, you know, this is what they've grown up with over the years. Because, you know, until recently, the South didn't have professional sports. In Florida, you had the spring training, and that was it. But now you have two baseball teams in Florida. You've got football teams in Florida. You've got basketball teams in Florida. And all that came as a result of air conditioning. And air conditioning came about as a result of a guy looking for a cure for malaria. And on and on and on. Makes no sense, but it's the truth. So you can thank the guy who invented air conditioning. You can thank the mosquito. For all of your worries. They didn't know it was mosquitoes, of course, but mosquitoes cause malaria, or at least they spread it around. And that's one of those little goofy history things that I like to pull up. Malaria literally means bad air, and they used to think that malaria was caused by bad air. So the guy thought, well, it always happens in hot places, so maybe if we cool the temperature down, it won't be so bad. And of course, you know, they had no idea that it was mosquitoes spreading the disease. So that's how air conditioning got invented. Brigadigi. And that's why you can play baseball in the South now. Not all of them have dome stadiums, though. The Florida Marlins, I think, they still play in an open-air stadium. That could be moita. That could be moita in the summer. It can be even more moita if global warming is correct and the ocean's level rise and Miami's underwater in you know, 50 or so years. Notice how I segue into that. Now, we have two numbers to call. If you want to call, the one is still the main number, which is 1-877-443-2366. However, if you can, and a lot of phone services, they have what they call free long distance, and there's no such thing as long distance anymore, really. Everything's done with satellites. It doesn't cost any more to make a call from New York to San Francisco than it does to make a call from Brooklyn to Queens, or from, you know, Chicago to Evanston. But the number to call in is, also a number to call in is 1-304-658-5453. That's 304-658-5453. And the toll-free number is still there, but if you don't have to use it, don't use it. Use this number, 304-658-5453, if you want to call in and talk to me and hope that I can talk to you back. We're halfway through the first hour here, or halfway through the Cup of Joe radio show. And we'll be back with more with the Cup of Joe show here on the Head On Radio Network. You know, ladies and gentlemen, the problem with the so-called professional media has just as much to do with the news they're not telling you than it does with what they do tell you. If, for example, you were to believe what you see on TV or read in the newspapers, you would think that everything is just fine in New Orleans or along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. That's why UnreportedNews.net is so important. It's not just keeping us informed of the tragedy that's still unfolding on the Gulf Coast, it's helping to do something about it by helping families who have had their lives and livelihoods destroyed. Not just by a terrible natural disaster, but by the callous indifference of the current administration and their wealthy allies in the news media. UnreportedNews.net is taking the initiative to keep us focused on this tragedy, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. So please go to UnreportedNews.net and give what you can, and let others know what's happening there. Because the only thing worse than an unnecessary death is an unmourned one. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. So Cheney went on Rush Limbaugh last week, and what struck me about this pornographic love fest was how arrogant and smug these guys still are, even at their lowest point of popularity. At the end of the interview, Limbaugh heaped praise upon the Bush administration for, of all things, using a recess appointment to make Sam Fox the ambassador to Belgium. He's the guy who helped underwrite the Swift boat attacks on John Kerry, who rightfully grilled him on it at the Senate hearing. For Limbaugh, the end around the Senate was a great move, the kind that garners a lot of support from the people in the country, he said. The people who listen to Rush, maybe. Rush said it shows that the administration won't let the Democrats get away with this kind of, well, my term, you don't have to accept it, Stalinist behavior from these people on that committee. But Cheney did accept it. Well, you're dead on, Rush, he said. Stalinist behavior because they used their constitutional advice and consent prerogative to oppose a nominee who funded some of the sleaziest ads in our nation's history? Rush and Cheney then made a joke of the whole thing, with Rush saying, you go on vacation, this is what happens to you. And Cheney adding, if you're a Democrat. They made a joke of our country. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Okay, we're back here on the Cup of Joe radio show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the number to call in if you want to call in and try to have a conversation is 304-658-5453. That's 304-658-5453, and you can give me a call and we can talk about a myriad of subjects tonight because, you know, I'm just kind of yammering away about a lot of different things. I've been working on, you know, trying to get more specific about my storylines, but, you know, quite frankly, I've got a lot of other stuff to do right now. When you do this and you're not doing it for a living and you got to rely on other things to earn your money and take up your time, then it is difficult. Did I say tonight? I guess, well, you know, every time is nighttime to me. I have no idea. but if you want to give a call and talk, we'll work it out. 304-658-5453. And I hope everybody's doing okay. And I don't know where you are in the country. And I hope your weather is better than what it is right here. I still can't believe it's snowing out. I can't believe I looked out the door and I saw snow. I looked out the window and saw snow. I saw the movie 300 yesterday. I would like to say that I saw it in a movie theater, but somebody at work bootlegged a copy for me, so I got to see it. I wasn't intending on seeing it in the movie theater anyway. I wanted to see what all the fuss was about, since this movie is making, you know, tons and tons of money. And I think I mentioned on the show a little while ago where I had that one kid who had seen this movie like 6 times in 2 days and was all gung-ho to go to war. And I'm just shaking my head. I mean, not even having seen the movie. You know, I thought that was really kind of stupid. And I wrote him a letter and I basically said, kid, if you're going to be inspired by a movie to do something, go see Gandhi instead. And I saw this thing, and you know something? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all the ships at sea, you know something? I do not like a lot of new movies, especially when we get down in, you know, the big special effects spectaculars, because they're nothing but special effects spectaculars. And I'm a student of history. I'm an amateur historian. I don't pretend to be an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but Thermopylae, and that whole situation, the Persian Wars with the, you know, the Greeks versus Persia, are a particular favorite sequence of history of mine. And in watching this movie, first of all, a lot of it was just, you know, the usual, let's do a lot of, you know, let's cut the guy's leg off in slow motion. You know, let's make, you know, let's make it look really, really nice and have the slow, dramatic music playing, and they slow everything down, and, you know, all that. And they got into the, you know, they started the thing where they were talking about how Spartan boys trained since they were kids to be soldiers and warriors and all this stuff, you know. And then, of course, they completely leave out the entire homosexual aspect of it. The Spartans would have an older guy who was basically in charge of a younger boy or a group of younger boys. And, you know, a part of their training, they would be diddling themselves. And you know, and then, you know, of course they can't talk about that. And you know, the Spartans fought with their lovers on the front lines, you know, and because it helped spur them on even more. And of course, against the Persian army, the Spartans had the advantage of terrain, but that's another story. And they used it wisely. They used it the way you should use it. But the truth of the matter is, and I was talking with Bob Kincaid about this before the show, the truth of the matter is, what was I going to say? Ah, that's annoying. I was just in the middle of something, and I looked at something else, and I completely lost my train of thought there. But I was watching this, and I was listening to the Spartans talk about freedom and stuff like that, and I'm just laughing, because the Spartans didn't believe in freedom. They were a slave state. Thank you. Bob Kincaid reminds me. I was talking about how, you know, the Spartans were a warrior culture, and we get absolutely practically nothing from them. I mean, I think we get the word Spartan. If you've ever heard this expression, he lived in a very Spartan environment, or he had very Spartan quarters. It means, you know, not a lot of luxuries, very, very simple standard of living. Thanks, Bob, for reminding me. My train of thought is easily derailed, unfortunately. But we get practically nothing from them, as far as culture is concerned. On the other hand, the Athenians, who were the Spartans' greatest ally on the Greek peninsula, we get nearly everything from. Nearly everything we know about art, science, mathematics, literature, politics, culture. Almost all of it comes from ancient Athens and a bunch from ancient Rome, too, who spread Greek culture around the world, Alexander and the Roman Empire. Those are the things that we keep. And I was remembering, I was watching the sequence there where King Leonidas was talking with the other Greeks, because the Spartans were not the only ones who fought at Thermopylae, as anyone who's seen the movie will tell you. I mean, at least that part of it was true. There were a lot of Greeks who fought, but the Spartans were the vanguard, and there's no question of how great soldiers they were. I mean, I'm not questioning that in any way, shape or form. But they were asking the other Greeks, you know, what their occupations were. I was like, well, I'm a potter, I'm a sculptor, I'm an artist or whatever, you know. And I said, well, it looks like, you know, we brought all the soldiers, the Spartans said. And I'm like, you know, the soldiers that are like that, I mean, you look at the American soldier, you look at the people who are fighting in Iraq, and Americans have been at least some of the best trained soldiers in the history of the world. What are these guys? I mean, they're really, you know, they're professional soldiers, but that's not really what they do. And especially when you're talking about a war situation where people are drafted. If you look at Saving Private Ryan, for example, the Tom Hanks character, the captain, what was he? He was a school teacher. Did he talk about, you know, how he trained all his life for war? No, he was doing what he felt he had to do. These are the people who are more courageous. The Spartans were trained for soldiery. And you know what? Eventually you become much better. You run across much better soldiers. The Spartans were great. I would love to have seen them have a good head-on-head battle with, say, a Roman legion under Julius Caesar. Keep it in the same realm of technology, you know. If you want to get a little further on, let's see him have him battle. What was the king who won the battle for the British at Agincourt, where they basically slaughtered a whole bunch of the French nobility? And the English longbow was much better than the Persian arrows. The English longbow could kill a man in full armor at 400 yards. That's a long distance. I mean, a rifle fires 400 yards. Henry V. Thank you, Bob. See, this Bob is my fact checker here, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Kincaid, by the way, is handling the production duties and giving Agnes a much-needed rest, because Agnes works very, very hard, and she's got a family to raise among all of her other duties. So Bob is stepping up and helping her out, which is what a good husband does. Which is what a good husband does. But the battles of Marathon, Thermopylae, Salamis, and Palatia, or Palatia, however you pronounce it, those were four of the most important battles ever fought in human history. Because had the Greeks lost any of those battles, our world would be very, very, very different. Had the Persians conquered the Greeks, they might have, as Xerxes, as the big pansy, you know, goofy-looking Xerxes in the movie said, you know, he would wipe them all out. He would destroy all their art and science. And they probably would have. Those guys like that have no concern about art and science. Just like, you know, the current administration has no concern with things like science. All they're interested in is getting power for themselves. That's really all they know. They do it very, very well, don't get me wrong, but they know nothing above and beyond that. And, you know, in history, if you look, first of all, they didn't even touch on the Battle of Salamis. They mentioned Palatia at the very end. They didn't mention the Battle of Salamis, the naval battle where the Athenians destroyed the Persian fleet. They didn't mention the fact that Xerxes really didn't want to do that, but he felt he had to avenge his father who had lost at Marathon. You know. But it was, you know, after the wars with Persia, the Athenians formed a Delian League. And then they got corrupt, just like we're getting corrupt now. A few rich and powerful people took over the country, and they wasted their military on a big assault in Sicily, and that was the end of the Athenian Empire. And it was the Spartans that everyone else in Greece turned to destroy the Athenians, and then they turned on the Spartans because the Spartans were even worse at governing than the Athenians were. But in the end, Sparta pretty much died truly, because we get practically nothing from them. Only their great battles and their Skillos warriors is all that we can remember. And again, I'm not doubting that, you know, they were the greatest warriors of their time. And I am not the greatest talk show host of my time. Let's take a little break here. We're three quarters of the way through. We got one more break coming up. We'll be back with more. Give us a call if you can. 304-658-5453. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, remember that one? That was big in the 60s, back when gas was like 30 cents a gallon, a house 22 grand, cigarettes a quarter a pack. But the packs came with a warning from the U.S. Surgeon General. Cigarette smoking causes lung cancer. It proved to be right. Music's changed, and so have prices. Gas is almost $3 a gallon. A decent house costs a quarter of a million, and a pack of cigarettes is about $5. But now, there's another cancer warning from the U.S. Surgeon General. Radon causes lung cancer, whether you smoke or not. Radon is an invisible, odorless gas that seeps into your home from underground. The only way to know if you have high levels of radon in your home is to have your home tested. The U.S. Surgeon General recommends it.
Call 1-800-693-5343 or visit radon.ozenet.ksu.edu. Sponsored by KDHE and the Kansas Radon Program at K-State.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, singing man. See how fast I can say it. Voice of the working man, thinkings man. Voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. We were talking about the movie 300. And, you know, I really feel bad for that kid who got all fired up to go to war because he saw this movie and he wanted to be. And I said, you know, kid, nobody really does hand-to-hand combat anymore. You know, nobody really does that. The only hand-to-hand combat you're going to have with anything is probably with some IED, and you're probably going to lose that battle. And what made it even worse was that this kid was talking to, let me try to quote him as exactly as I possibly can. I just want a chance to legally kill someone before this war is over. And if that's what this movie is doing for people, getting them all fired up to do that, then it's sickening. But I just kind of, you know, I was watching the movie and just kind of laughing at it. The Spartans talking about freedom. Are you kidding me? I can't say I'd like to say it because this is radio and I don't do the cursing thing here. But I'm like, are you kidding me? The Spartans kept slaves. They had their helots. In fact, the reason why they had a lot of trouble going out to fight wars is because if they sent too many men out, then the slaves would revolt because of the way they were treated. Excuse me. And the Spartans would do things like expose the kids that they thought were, not good enough. I don't think they really threw him off the cliff. I think that from what I read something about that somewhere where they basically just left him out exposed somewhere, and if the elements killed him, fine, but that's where other people would come and grab them and they would become slaves. And again, I would really have loved to have seen the Spartans have a good fight against a nice big Roman legion. You know, the Roman legions were the best infantry in the world through medieval times. I mean, you know, what I'm saying is that once, you know, after Rome fell, a lot of it was light cavalry and things like that. And certainly in medieval times, it was cavalry. And there wasn't much in the way of infantry. So when the Roman legions fell, they didn't have a really, really good infantry until, I guess, Napoleonic times, I'm imagining. But throughout all of medieval history, the medieval armies were not that tough in that sense. You know, they didn't have the same kind of strength that the Roman legions had. And really, the strongest armies were the ones that had really, really good light cavalry. You look at what the Huns accomplished, and it was remarkable how much they were able to conquer, because they had that light cavalry. They could go very, very quickly. They were very lightly armored, and they fire arrows. And, you know, they don't teach enough military history in school. They don't really teach it properly. There are things that they need to teach in school that they simply don't. One is military history, and the other is economics. Nobody teaches you about economics proper. They teach you general stuff. They teach you how to write a check. That was my economics education growing up. And they'll try to teach you about business, but they really don't. They really don't teach you anything about how our economy actually works. Does anybody remember the movie Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield? I keep remembering this movie. For some reason, I guess he just wanted, the guy wanted to be with his son, and he was already a very successful businessman, rich, successful businessman. And so he goes in. It's a comedy. It's a Rodney Dangerfield movie, for crying out loud. And the big event is this big, you know, dive that he does, the triple Lindy that takes like 3 diving boards. But anyway, there's a scene in there that's really funny where he's taking a course on establishing a business, and the professor is talking about, okay, you know, this is what we do. We got to do this, and, you know, you got to set up your business plan, and you got to have this and that, you know. And Brian Adrian just like, no, that's not what you got to do. Oh, first you got to, you know, you got to go out there, and you got to bribe this guy, and you got to give this guy money, and you got to give this guy money, or this doesn't get done, you know. And this is a guy with real-world experience, you know. And the teacher's just like, well, maybe that's the way it is in your world. Hey, this is the way it is for real, you know. And it's like that. And, you know, I don't know about, you know, the college stuff. And college professors can get pretty insulated, too, living in their own little world like that and really don't have an idea of how things work in the regular world. But the truth of the matter is you have a lot of people in government now that feel the same way. And, of course, you have people who are in government who don't believe in the very idea of government. It's like having a professor who doesn't believe in education, you know. You're not going to get a very good education out of it. But we really, you know, throughout the elementary school and the high school process, they really don't do enough to teach you about money and how the whole economy works. And I wonder if part of that is intentional. And some people have a head for that. Some people just naturally have a head for that. And it's more than just the guy that goes out and does the extra effort to sell, you know, the junior achievement or whatever it is they call it, you know, and selling some things. And some people just don't have a knack for that. I've never had a knack for being a salesman. And some people are good at that. And if you don't have a big college education, you know, that's the best way to make a lot of money, is just to be a salesman in this economy, the way things are. There's always work for a good salesman. Always. Because people always need to sell their stuff. And in fact, in this economy now, that's really the best way you can do it. You know, the best way you can make money is to be a salesman. But if you're not, then you can have a lot of trouble. And it used to be during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, even if you had if you were an unskilled laborer of some sort, construction worker or whatever, and the construction working, depending on the type of job, can be skilled labor. But, you know, you can have a ditch-digging job and still make enough money to support yourself and to support a family, too. You can't do that these days. Meanwhile, corporate profits are through the roof. I saw a chart the other day that showed the scale of living wage or the average wage and the minimum wage and how much they've gone up. And they've stayed pretty steady throughout, you know, for the last 10 years or so, you know, up or down maybe a couple of fractions of percentage points, whereas CEO pay has gone up 500-600%. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous amounts of money. And even my nemesis, Bruce Lewis, who comments under the name of Plymouth Belvedere on my blog, he's a conservative, and he says, you know, this isn't business. This is piracy, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, nobody's held accountable. You have no incentive not to screw up because you get your ton of money anyway. Whereas if you or I screw up on the job somewhere, we get fired and we have to explain to our next potential employer why we got fired from our last job. And we only hurt ourselves when we allow this to happen, you know, allow people to get fired for no reason without saying, if you fire this guy, we're all going to walk. Whether you're in a union or not, sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you simply have to do that. And that's the strength of being in a union. As I tell people every day, you need to imagine that every single day in your house, there's the Bush administration, there's the Republican leadership, there are their corporate allies right there in the room with you with a gun to your head, taking money out of your wallet, out of your purse, out of wherever you hide it, because that's exactly what they're doing 24/7. They do that in any number of ways. And add to that the fact that they take your sons and your daughters and they take them over and they entice them over and with a big cause and they put a gun to their head and they blow their brains out. And the only chance you have against that is to have your fellow brothers and sisters, workers, with you in the room defending you. Hey, there's the music. We got to go. Man, time flies. Cup of Joe Radio Show is a production of the Head On Radio Network. The great Bob Kincaid running the board. Cup of Joe Radio Show has been sponsored by UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news. Foxed Up with John Fox is coming up next. And a big surprise there. We'll be back. This is Joe Vecchio on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Get back to work.
Says the U.S. military, Iran has been training Iraqi insurgents in the assembly of roadside bombs. According to detainees' debriefs, Iran has been manufacturing and smuggling as well as training Iraqi insurgents in the use of a type of roadside bomb which is capable of piercing armored vehicles. In some of the fiercest fighting since the new security plan began, at least 20 extremists were killed in a district in Baghdad known to be a Sunni insurgent stronghold. 4 Iraqi soldiers were killed and 16 U.S. soldiers were wounded. Bombs have been detonated in Algiers, Algeria, killing at least 17 people and wounding 82. It is believed an Islamist group associated with Al-Qaeda is responsible. It is the first such attack for the North African city since the 1990s, when 200,000 people were killed during the last Islamic insurgency. North Korea says it won't be able to shut down its main nuclear reactor as promised on Saturday, but should be able to do so within 30 days. At the same time, Pyongyang says it would begin admitting UN inspectors. The Defense Department today published its first draft of its new regulations governing payday loans to the military and their families. Annual interest could be no more than 36%. Some critics say the proposal doesn't go far enough. On Capitol Hill, Democrats have subpoenaed Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez for additional documents a week before he's scheduled to testify about the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. Gonzalez has until Monday to produce the requested material. In Durham, North Carolina, the state attorney general is expected to drop the kidnapping and rape charges against the Duke lacrosse players. The case has been controversial and now has led to the district attorney, Mike Nifong, facing charges of unethical conduct. Possible Republican presidential candidate and former Tennessee Senator Fred Thompson has been diagnosed with a treatable form of lymphoma. The star of NBC's Law & Order said he is still taking steps towards a possible entrance into the presidential race. And President Bush has invited Democrats to the White House to talk about war appropriations. He reiterated his promise to veto any bill that contains a timetable for troop withdrawal. In Sri Lanka, on the eve of the country's New Year's celebration,